Welcome to Plot Spackle.
From this point forward, there will be spoilers.
You've been warned.
Welcome to Plot Spackle. I'm Richard. Would you rather have a pet kaiju or a giant robot?
I'm John, and I'd rather have a pet kaiju.
And I'm Eric. I would much rather have a giant robot.
Well, I think that tells you everything you need to know about Eric.
That I'm right and John is wrong.
Let's have our my pet kaiju fight your robot.
Okay.
Pet kaiju's gonna win.
I'm pretty sure the robots are the heroes of this movie, John.
Alright, so looking around here, and looks like we're gonna be filling our plot holes with 20,000 tons of robotic punches.
Rocket robotic punches, even.
And chest missiles.
And hitting them with boats. But today, we're talking about Pacific Rim.
All right. So, a little bit about Pacific Rim. This movie was released the 12th of July, 2013. It had a $190 million budget. And it grossed... only $101,802,000. So...
That's
a flop, guys.
Wait, is that within the
is
U.S.?
That U.S. or worldwide?
That is just U.S.
All right, because I think worldwide it'd be better.
Yeah, the website I'm using actually doesn't say like overall gross. It just says USA.
Ah.
So it didn't do well in the USA, but I'm pretty sure it did well across the globe.
It did. Worldwide, it hit $411 million.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not seeing that on IMDb.
So a bit of a two for one, actually. Just enough to qualify making a sequel. So what is it about, you ask? What is the story behind Pacific Rim? And it's really simple. There's monsters, and they're trying to destroy humanity, and humanity builds giant robots to punch the monsters.
Surely it goes deeper than this.
Yes.
If you wanted something deep, you need to look in a different movie. This is just joy. It's just childlike glee watching robots punch monsters in cities with colorful palettes. It's just fun. That's what it's about.
Okay.
You're not expecting an Oscar from this, but...
Oh, no. You go, it's a popcorn movie, but you know it's going to be a popcorn movie, and that's what it's about.
But because of that, it does have a couple of plot holes in there.
Yeah, those sort of things do kind of just creep in when you're having fun.
So, we've got a couple. We'll start here. Because of the way the robot works and the whole interdimensional rift that our giant monsters are coming through, nobody's figured out how to send anything through this rift to stop stuff from coming through until a couple of scientists manage to techno mind meld with bits of a monster and learn the rift only opens if you have kaiju genetics with you. But yet... we're still able to track the giant robot when it falls through to the other side, and the escape pods go back through the rift. How?
There were so many kaiju guts just strewn about the ocean floor at that point. It was just kind of like left open.
Yeah, they forgot to... the aliens were raised in a barn, and they forgot to close the door behind them. I have to say they can track it because they actually have something on the other side. And they do say it won't open, but it stays open, like it would always close when they try to put something through. But now they're on the other side, and so that they probably don't have a lock from that side. Things can go out, but they can't go back in.
Okay.
We know it works.
But how are they able to, like, track Gypsy Danger through the rift?
They could probably send signals through it. They say it's atomic in nature, I think. So we know that it's kind of a physical thing. So, I mean, they couldn't track anything before because nothing got through, but now they have Gypsy Danger through, and they are receiving signals back.
Maybe there's a Geiger counter down there, and they're measuring the radioactive decay.
Yeah.
And as it gets further away, they're thinking, oh, this is farther away from the portal. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Or maybe radio signals, just like tracking radio signals, and radio signals can probably go through. Let's just assume that they can. And the weaker it gets, the further away it is.
So there's a bit of a estimation from the computer. I mean,
all right.
I mean, they had a pretty good layout of its shape of the grift too before this even. So they had some level way to map it. It's just they couldn't get anything to go through it, and they said it would specifically close.
Okay.
So I got one for you. So the Kaiju Leatherback sets off some sort of EMP attack that just wipes out all the electronics in the city and the Shatter Dome and all the high-tech expensive new Jaegers. But it doesn't affect Gypsy Danger and all the helicopters needed to carry Gypsy Danger into battle. Those ones are okay. Pretty selective EMP if you ask me.
Well, the upside with EMPs is EMPs don't affect electronics that are turned off while it's happening. So like all of those helicopters that were just sitting on pads and not turned on. Yeah, you start up that diesel engine, all of it's still going to work.
They could even be fly-by-wire, where everything is analog. I mean, they had those in the Vietnam War. Those helicopters wouldn't have been affected by any impulse. Another thing, too, like, how old is Gypsy Danger compared to the other Jaegers in the movie? It's an older one. It's an older model, isn't it?
Yeah, Gypsy Danger was one of the older ones that they had. It was a Mark III Jaeger, but it was one of the older ones there. Theoretically, it was supposed to have launched in 2017, and the film is happening in 2025.
What I'm getting at is, was this during a time when humanity was still launching nuclear missiles or warheads at the Kaiju?
Like, they didn't do that since the initial bit.
Because the reason I bring that up is when you detonate a nuclear bomb, there's an EMP pulse that goes off with that bomb. But as it's quoted in Ocean's 11, you know, that usually isn't such a big deal, followed by all the massive destruction that a nuclear bomb causes. So if Gypsy Danger was built in a time when nuclear bombs were going off all the time, maybe it was shielded against those EMP pulses.
Well, it straight up is a nuclear-powered vessel, so it has a lot of radioactive shielding. The earlier marks didn't have that, and the later ones weren't nuclear.
So basically it had its protection built in because of the nuclear reactor.
And it was all powered down for maintenance and repairs.
Yep, because it wasn't being deployed, so I mean you don't turn things on if you're not going to use it.
Tell that to my kids.
And so the helicopters would have been the same. They were, you know,
that's why your kids aren't employed at the Shatter Dome and the Pan Pacific Defense.
They were probably the second string helicopters, because I think the first string helicopters would have been kept in a state of prepared to launch,
mm-hmm.
so that they can launch quickly, and then they'd cycle through them, and so they just have to get the next set up quickly.
That makes sense. I'm not familiar with military protocol, so. Anyways, we're into another plot hole, guys. So this has to deal with the beginning of the movie, and it's talking about how the Jaegers are just too gosh darn expensive.
Pricey.
I think it's mentioned that the newest Jaeger costs $100 billion to run. And so the world governments have decided, you know what is much more cost effective? Let's build a whole wall around the Pacific and make Hawaii pay for it.
I don't think they actually were going to get Hawaii to pay for this, Eric.
Nope. And that wall just got 10 feet taller.
Uh-huh.
But basically, the world governments are like, hey, let's build a wall to keep all these kaiju in there. So are they basically... So the plot hole is, are they just going to let the wall sit there? Like, is it really that going to be that effective?
See, and my answer for this is that the wall was never actually intended to stop kaiju. It may have been big enough to, like, prevent some of the Category 1, Category 2 kaiju. But when they were really building the wall, there were much bigger and much angrier threats. And the wall itself is just a giant engineering project, because you have a whole bunch of refugees from destroyed cities with no jobs and nowhere to go, where if you put up a giant construction project, you can get a lot of unskilled labor that you can put onto this wall that gives jobs, an economy, and some kind of thing for the public to be focusing on while they're dealing with the problem. I don't think the wall was intended to stop the kaiju at all. It's just there to give people something to do.
So what will they actually do about the kaiju without the Jaegers then?
Probably, given that it's a bunch of governments and they're all trying to figure out what to do, they were probably just going to nuke the rift really a lot.
Nuke it from orbit, baby.
It's the only way to be sure.
Except they did that a lot and they weren't sure. Anyways, but you have a lot more on that topic, don't you, Richard?
I have so much more on that particular one.
There's like specifically how expensive the building the wall is than running the Jaegers.
Yeah, I've got something like 27 different tabs open on that. If you're interested, I'm going to do a thing about it on our Patreon.
Richard's rabbit hole, so feel free to support us.
All right, do you have a plot hole for us, Richard?
I do. I've got another one. So, when nuclear reactors melt down, they don't result in nuclear explosions. Generally, they result in lots of leaking radiation that destroys all sorts of things around you in the environment, gets a lot of people killed, and makes places unlivable, but not explosions. And yet, they're going to have Gypsy Danger's reactor melt down, and it gives us an explosion. So, how would that work?
Well, because we saw it work, one, I'll point this out, like, we know that it works. Within their science, it works. But another idea could be that it was built in specifically that they could weaponize the core, like
kind of like a self-destruct button or something.
Yeah, like a self-destruct, like if you really needed to, you could have a walking bomb.
Wait a minute, you're acting like this was a giant robot that might get sent out on missions it might not win.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, because that's what it was.
All right, fine.
Yeah, like they built it. It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Man, what a crappy feature.
Hey, you gotta nuke something. You got a robot to do it.
I mean, who would ever blow up a robot
while
they're still in it?
Well, I mean, the engineers build it.
I'm looking at you, Hiro Yui.
Oh, there's some anime fan knowledge for you right there.
For everyone else, that was Gundam talk.
Yep. I want a Gundam movie, guys.
Someday, there'll be a good one.
All right.
Ready Player One has one. It made me want one more. Anyways.
All right, so hear about this for a plot hole. So why are these robots picking up objects to hit the monsters? We got cargo containers, we got a boat. I mean, that boat's pretty impressive and all, but I'm pretty sure the high-tech super alloys from advanced material manufacturing are far more effective than it. I mean, it's like a buff guy grabbing and punching you with a bag of Cheetos. Maybe he should have just punched you.
Except I have one problem with that analogy. It's more like somebody hitting you with a wiffle bat, and if you get hit with the end of the wiffle bat, that still hurts really a lot because you get a lot more leverage at the end of that than you would just punching. And momentum and focused points of force is really how you deal damage to things.
Plus, they hadn't even revealed the sword yet. Like, sure, it has like two swords in its arms, but that needs to be saved for the right climactic moment.
Yeah, when they felt it was important. I'm going to agree with Richard here that I think it also has something to do with stress on the robot. Because every time you're going to punch, it's putting stress on the fists. But if you have the boat take the stress instead, like the boat breaks, but it does do some damage to the kaiju, but you're still okay.
Plus, inside your super expensive alloy fists is your plasma gun, your chain sword, everything else. If you wreck that fist punching it, then all of your other attack options are removed. So it's just a bad plan.
So if you have something, use it. Adds a little bit of mass, too.
Exactly.
Listen, actual, like, real fights aren't pretty things. You just want to win. And you know what? You want to know who complain about fighting fair?
People who didn't win the fight?
Exactly.
So you're on the side of the kaiju.
No, I'm on the side of winning with giant robots.
All right.
I have an issue. So in the beginning exposition, it makes it clear how important a close bond is for people to be able to drift. It's a very rare bond, so rare that the original pilots were, you know, brothers, triplets, fathers and sons, the married couple that the Russians are, you know, whatever works for them. But in the movie, as soon as the main character, I forget his name, meets Mako, he's able to drift with her like instantly. So that's pretty convenient.
Well, I think it's a change. It's a, we're talking about at the beginning of the film, where they're early drifting, like they're starting to understand the science. And so people who have the familiar life and close connection drift easier. But as time has passed, like they can have a lot more consistent bonds. And I think there's training involved. Like if you put people through these events together, they bond easier, or they have a lot of more compensation technology within the Jaegers. So as long as you kind of can get into the same mindset of the person and connect with them, you can drift with them.
Plus, I mean, as we see in the film, there are plenty of problems with Raleigh and Mako drifting, as Mako gets herself lost in the drift a couple of times. So it's not a perfect instantly, oh, we're able to just drift.
Plus, there was the whole fighting exercise where you see how compatible a person is, not basically on who wins or loses, but whether or not they can keep the fight going well as they anticipate each other. Because I think that's a bit of it, is you have to be thinking about the same time as the other person what you want to do.
Given that you're trying to get a giant robot to move by doing the same motions together, you have to be pretty well in sync, or telling the other person exactly what you're going to do the whole time. Okay, so here's another one then. In order to fight the kaiju, our best option is building giant killer robots to beat them to death in hand-to-hand combat, as we know. Mm-hmm. But in the movie's final fight, we also learned that apparently the correct answer is nuke them. I mean, building gigantic super robots, cool, but why not, as soon as we detect any kind of event, nuke it? I mean, is pollution our major thing here, or...
How about radiation in the ocean? They get spread everywhere.
John, name one time that has ever backfired.
Well, I can't say that it's ever backfired specifically recently, but it used to be a thing with Bikini Atoll, with the nuclear testing there. The Fukushima power plant caused a lot of radiation flow through the around of the ocean.
Oh, I thought you were going to mention that time when there's that iguana on that island on the nuclear testing, and then it went and attacked New York.
No, it attacked Tokyo. People thought it was that same one, but it wasn't.
No, see, the one that the iguana that got nuked did attack New York.
Oh.
Yeah. We don't talk about that one.
That's a lot of radiation. That's, how many days does the movie cover once we get into the meat of things?
Not that many.
So that would have been, what, like 4 or 5 nukes in that time period? And that's, you know, in counting all the other kaiju that have existed since 2013, I think is when the first one comes through.
Yep, 2013.
And we're 2025, so 12 years of kaiju, 12 years of nuking. And specifically, the first kaiju was really resilient to the nukes. Like, it took more than one to bring it down. That was after it destroyed multiple cities. And so I think the final one was very, very high yield, which isn't a great thing to be tossing around. And it only was able to kill the level 4s after they had been beaten up a lot by the Jaegers.
Well, wasn't one of them, like, cut in half, basically?
Yeah, well, there were three. The gator-like one was cut in half. The other Category 4 one had been, like, stabbed in the face and beat around a bunch and got killed. But then the Cat 5 was still kind of just going at it. It didn't care. And so, your repeated nukings would eventually just irradiate the oceans.
The other thing... Again, part of my rabbit hole. The Pacific is the source of so much industry and so much food for the world. If you nuke the Pacific Ocean repeatedly, you're going to destroy the world economy. and you want to be real unpopular real quick, destroy the economy.
All right. So here's a question. So the scientists have known that the kaiju come through that one specific rift, and they know where it is. So will we park 30 Jaegers all around the coastline? Why don't we just, like, put all 30 of these Jaegers just, like, right there around the rift? Like, waiting for them. As soon as they come out, they just swarm them. Kill it.
Step one. Those 30 Jaegers are across the course of the entire 12 years, and most of them aren't active all at once. So we don't have 30 Jaegers to work with.
All right. You know, like, 4 or 5 could probably beat one up real quick, right?
All right. So 4 or 5, but then you have a lot of other operating issues. How are your alloys at handling, you know, seawater? Seawater is incredibly corrosive. How are you going to be keeping them manned, staffed? Do you have boats up there to feed all the people who are crewed on these Jaegers on the bottom of the ocean at all times? People in isolation do not handle it super well without loads of training, and that's not even talking about how they're going to probably get crushed just by going down there, even if we've got super alloys, because even our current nuclear submarines cannot get anywhere near the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, even at its average depth, without 100% crushing.
So just as a fun fact, but Richard was talking about the average depth of the Pacific Ocean being 12,000 feet. So the Titanic right now is sitting at a depth of 12,500 feet. Take that and add that to the whole of the Pacific Ocean. And the submarines that have to go get the Titanic, they have to be specifically built to withstand that pressure. And you can only fit like a couple things in there.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want to park Jaegers around it. Like, some other style of fighting system would work there, but not many. The kaiju kind of have the upper hand.
Yeah, they are built as amphibious things designed to kill stuff.
So it's just a big problematic deployment, really. Like, keeping them on hand, you have to cycle them out.
Plus, you have all the all the different militaries of all the different countries.
Oh, yeah.
Whose territory is it? No, who's in command? I mean, clearly it's going to be America, because we funded the first couple of kaiju.
Russia would like to keep its kaiju on it, sure, all right?
And
we
China,
trust America.
But, China's you know, got a couple of things to say about what happens in the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, yeah.
So what they really need to do is take those kaijus and blast them into space.
Oh, that's also up there with the wall with the improbable things.
No. Listen, SpaceX could strap a whole bunch of rockets to a kaiju and then blast it into space.
You know,
and then reuse those rockets later.
I kind of see that actually happening. If kaiju did show up and were this problem, Elon Musk would offer to launch them into space. Like, he'd build a prototype of a kaiju launcher.
It'd probably be like, it looked like a Model 3 Tesla or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And he'd just go attach it to it and just launch it into space and it wouldn't work. But then he'd blame someone.
Or it would show up like, I don't know, 3 years later, something like that.
Yeah. So, any other plot holes, small thoughts?
Okay. I have one.
Okay.
And it's not one you're going to find on too many other things. Why are we using a computer AI that has been proven to attempt to kill all of its test subjects as the operating system inside of our giant fighting robots?
We're not. We're just using the same voice activation system. The AI is totally different. It's just the interaction, the voice they use. A lot of people who do voices for computers and stuff, they just get sampled a lot. Like the, I believe it's Siri, didn't actually know that that's what she was doing, that she was doing the Apple voice. She just kind of was doing a voice, doing a sample for something. I mean, she got paid, but not as much as she thought she should be for that.
Not as much as how many iPhones are there? Billions, probably.
And so it's the same thing. It's not the same AI. It's just, you know, they use the same voice sample.
Maybe they told the computer that the kaiju were the test subjects.
So here's a question. Why giant robots?
Well, step one, giant robots are cool.
All right, I'd accept that.
Step two,
giant monsters are cool?
No, giant monsters are uncool. They're killing a lot of things.
Yeah.
Oh, I just mean like in a meta sense, like what the whole like production thing, like why did they have giant robots fighting giant monsters?
No, I'm saying like in the situation, why would the giant robots be a good choice for fighting the giant monsters?
Battleships were ineffective.
Well, they weren't. That's one thing. And I think a lot of it is also based on because they were going to have to fight monsters in urban environments. So you want something that's more agile and can react better. And so you're going to go with a humanoid form.
Yeah, yeah. Plus it can go into the water and into the coast and shallow, at least shallow water for a while.
Yeah. And so that's why you're going with the more humanoid thing than a giant tank or something.
And just how easy would it be for, okay, let's say two people drifting, would it be easy for them to control a tank? Like, why do you need two people to drive a tank or whatever? I don't know. We'll just use
you tank. Need a whole crew to drive tanks.
See, I also think, like, my bit on this is there's a politics involved, because the other option would be to do a massive military production and just ramp up for all the nations in the Pacific Rim, and what happens then?
Well, as soon as the kaiju are gone, you have a whole bunch of highly trained people with weapons that want to shoot things.
Yeah, yeah. You do a military buildup, and who would be involved here? Let's talk about all our players. We have a buildup of China, Russia, Japan, the U.S., South Korea. North Korea has a bit of coastline there, doesn't it?
I think so,
a little bit. Australia.
Enough to claim. I mean, you want to think about having to tell North Korea no, they can't do a massive military buildup. I mean, they shouldn't have to be attacked by kaiju. But, you know, if you do Jaegers, Jaeger's not very good for military purposes. It'd be really bad for it.
Like, literally a few missiles from an airplane or whatever could probably take one down. Like, into the joints and whatnot.
Yeah, they're not very good for a holding territory. They're not very good for rapid strikes or deployment against something besides a giant monster.
They are not stealth.
They are not stealth at all. And so then it's a lot easier for everyone to do. Like, you can have a couple of Jaegers. They'll protect your coast. But it's kind of worthless to go to war with, so you don't have to worry about it as much.
Plus, when the war is over, you can make movies about the robots boxing each other.
Yeah. All right. So is that all our plot holes?
I believe that is.
All right. What are your thoughts on Pacific Rim?
So, I really like this film. It's the only beef I've ever had with it is that there's some shots that are super cool, but I feel are too similar to other shots that are also super cool. And so you could have done a different shot that was more different, but still super cool.
Just a little more variance. I love it too. It's a love letter to the genre, and when I was watching it in the theater, I was like, there was a part where I was slightly giggling, like inside, like I felt like I was a 10-year-old again. Like, that brought that joy to me. And the thing is, really, is so I'm a Godzilla fan, but the thing is I had always kind of been a Godzilla fan, but I hadn't actually watched many Godzilla movies when I was young. Like, I remember having the interest in Godzilla, and I knew a lot about small things of it, but I hadn't actually watched many Godzilla films. After Pacific Rim, like the joy of kaiju returned to me. And that's actually when I sought out and tried to watch all the Godzilla films so I could actually have that. And so that was a thing for me from Pacific Rim. It reignited a passion that I'd kind of forgotten about.
How about you, Eric?
So I kind of am upset that I missed seeing this in theaters. I had to watch it on my TV. And the first time I saw it, my speakers weren't working very well, so I would have the audio, the talking channel, which, you know, the center channel or whatever, it'd be really quiet, so I'd have to turn up the sound to hear what they were saying, and then all of a sudden a giant robot fight would break out and like wake up all my neighbors. So the first time I saw it, like, it was pretty, but I wasn't super impressed with it. But I watched it again recently, and it was much better. Like, the audio is actually done right.
And I love the music for this film.
It gets you pumped.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is, like we said earlier in the podcast, this is definitely a popcorn flick. But as long as you know that, you know, it's a guilty pleasure. You can enjoy it.
Yeah.
But man, Idris Elba practiced that speech at the end for like literally hours before it happened so that he could nail that speech.
And then he canceled the apocalypse.
And it's so good.
So I don't want to point out there is one little deep thing in the movie. I consider at the beginning of the movie, there's the scene where there's the grandfather and the son walking along the coast of Alaska. And they have a metal detector. And I feel like this whole sequence is in there to introduce to you to the concept of the film, of what it was. And because they're walking along and the grandpa's all like, oh, what do you hope to find? And the grandson, and the grandson's like, oh, maybe a boat. And then they find a toy robot. And like the kid's all upset and like disappointed, but the grandpa's all like kind of got this knowing smile in his eyes. And then an actual robot shows up. But my thing is this story, this whole purpose that's in there in the film is to remind you, you know, you could be looking for something like a boat, something to take you on a voyage of discovery, but you should sometimes just be happy when you find a toy robot. That is the message of Pacific Rim.
Enjoy the toy robots in your life.
Enjoy the toy robots.
Those toy robots might fight your brother's dinosaurs or something.
Definitely.
Or the dinosaurs' kaijus, I can't remember.
So, I think that's it for today. Like us on Facebook.
Talk to us on Twitter. Well, Facebook, we're at Plot Spackle. Twitter, we're at Plot Spackle Podcast.
Or shoot us an email at plotspacklepodcast@gmail.com.
And thanks for listening.
Don't let the kaijus bite. Seriously, they're big. They'd kill you.
Yeah, it'd crush you.